You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Well, The Wall Street Journal has new ownership with Rupert Murdoch.
News Corp chairman Rupert Murdoch.
And I would never bet against Rupert Murdoch.
He was educated at Oxford and inherited a newspaper and over decades put together an extraordinary global empire.
But Rupert Murdoch is no saint.
Well, I didn't think that I'm particularly conservative.
He bought American magazines and newspapers.
We've tended to support Republicans, but not universally, not always.
The 20th Century Fox Film Studio, and he started the Fox Network and the Fox News Channel.
We call ourselves fair and balanced.
He has satellite systems in the United Kingdom, the United States, and Asia.
He hires lobbyists the way Imelda Marcus bought shoes and stacks them in his cavernous closet along with his conscience.
And I would never bet against Rupert Murdoch.
At nearly 80 years old, Keith Rupert Murdoch is still making headlines. He has a personal fortune worth $9 billion and runs a global media empire, 100 newspapers, including the New York Post, Fox TV and Films, HarperCollins, MySpace, and most recently Dow Jones and the Wall Street Journal. What drives Mr. Murdoch to keep on adding to this huge media empire? Well, Vanity Fair columnist Michael Wolff offers a rare view of him in a new biography, The Man Who Owns the News, Inside the Secret World of Rupert Murdoch. It's published by Broadway Books. I'm delighted that it brings Michael Wolff back to the show. Hello.
And I'm delighted to be here.
Based on what's been written about this book in the press, Rupert Murdoch is not happy with the way that he's portrayed. What doesn't he like?
Well, I think to some degree this is just he's protesting just for the sake of protesting. I think he's surprised by the personal nature of this book. You know, Rupert is ultimately, or certainly would like to think of himself as, an impersonal man. And I think that he probably imagined that I would write a book like a newspaper man would write a book about his deals, about the events that he had helped shape, instead of writing a book about Rupert.
But even some of the quotes about his holdings, he's contested, despite the fact that you did 50 interviews with him and have everything on tape.
Well, I think that part of the thing that he objects to is the characterizations of the executives closest to him, and that would be Peter Chernin, who's the COO of News Corporation, and also Roger Ailes, who runs Fox News. So I think that he probably there's some internal politics going on here. He has to be able to say, "I told him that was completely erroneous." But I actually feel that he probably it takes a little, because he's a kind of a troublemaker. He's enjoying their discomfort.
Well, it's interesting that two biographies have come out recently, the V.S. Naipaul biography and this one, in which the subjects were very cooperative, and yet they don't come across as the nicest people in the world. And you wonder why they even cooperated in the first place.
Well, I think people cooperate in biographies because they feel they're worthy of a biography. And I think in Rupert's case, he succeeded in buying Dow Jones, an unbuyable company.
Which is a theme that ties this whole book together.
Exactly. And I think that he thought he deserved some notice. And the notice that he wanted, and the point that he wanted to make, is that he won and everyone else lost.
Now, did you know him before? Because you used to work for him, didn't you, when you were at New York Magazine?
I never worked for him. And when I was at New York Magazine, he had already sold it. But I have known him. I've known him for about 10 years. I've interviewed him before. I've written about him in a way that he has, I think, kind of liked. I mean, there was one piece I wrote about him. I described him as being somewhat like reminding me of my grandfather. And he called me up and he says, "Your grandfather must be 120 years old.
Well, is he funny? Is he outgoing?
Well, I think fundamentally he is shy. He is, when he relaxes, yeah, he can be actually quite funny. He's most funny when he's talking about other people. He's actually quite devastating on the subject of most other people. He has a a very precise sense of everyone's weakness, which he clearly loves to exploit, and that's enjoyable if it's not your weakness that he's talking about.
Of course, that's when you understood him, because you said he mumbles a lot and he still has a thick Australian accent and speaks in Australian jargon.
Amazingly hard to understand. Matter of fact, I had my researcher is from Melbourne, and so early on I said, you got to be in these meetings with me, because I don't know what he's talking about, and we're gonna have to decipher the tapes here.
That's despite the fact that he's renounced his Australian citizenship. Do you think he sees himself as somebody who's become an American?
I think he does, yes. I mean, I think very, very much he is an American. He is a New Yorker in many ways, perhaps in all ways, except for the way he talks.
And when you describe him as a difficult interview, is it because of that or because he's also kind of cagey?
Well, no. Actually, he's not cagey. I think he's incredibly transparent. But the problem is, and this is a sort of substantial problem for a biographer, is that he can't talk about the past because he doesn't remember it, and more importantly, because he's flatly not interested in it.
Well, he doesn't remember it. A guy who's so much in the present, or so he has a bad memory?
No, completely. He may have some memory problems too, but he is completely in the present. He doesn't, and for a guy like that, you know, I've spoken to many of these guys, and they're all in love with their accomplishments. Rupert is not. He really doesn't care about that.
And you also say he's not good at explaining himself. He's not interested.
No, there is no psychological nuance to Rupert Murdoch's thinking about himself. You cannot say, Rupert, why did you do the following? Because he will not be able to answer. He looks at you blankly.
So what is it about him that gets under other people's skin? Why does he instill such strong, often negative feelings in so many people?
Because he can't lose, I think, is a major part of it. He just must win. He just pursues and pursues. There's a kind of monomania to this thing that he must always, again, get the better of whoever he thinks he deserves the better of, which is just about everybody.
My guest is Michael Wolff, Wolff. His latest book, The Man Who Owns the News, Inside the Secret World of Rupert Murdoch, published by Broadway Books. So let's talk about the Wall Street acquisition. You said Murdoch had long coveted two things, the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. It's obvious these are two very powerful newspapers. Is that the reason that he was so attracted to them?
Well, I think it is, but I think, you know, over the course of 50 years from Adelaide, Australia, to London, to owning many newspapers in the United States, what has characterized him is that he has always wanted to buy the best newspaper he could buy.
So he has the Times in England, but he also has some of the lousiest newspapers in England.
And they were, let's the word lousy.
Well, the New York Post is an example of lousy in this city.
But let's look at that. Let's look at the Sun. The Sun in London, a very powerful paper in the UK. It is perhaps, I would describe it as the perfect tabloid. It is absolutely on the money, on the mark when it comes to the tabloid form. It's a kind of, you know, its skill is compression. And it does that in a way that's nearly, I'd argue, balletic.
Well, to some degree, it looks like AM New York, or one of those newspapers, with a lot of gossip as the featured stuff and pictures of bare-breasted women.
I think you have not appreciated the Sun, and it looks that way only until you kind of you get on its wavelength, and then it is I would argue it is a perfect product.
So he's perfected that. Why does he want a paper like the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times? Did they give him credibility that he needs?
Well,
seeks?
Let me go back to what I said, that he has always wanted to buy the best newspaper he could buy. Now, the Sun was, at that point, the best newspaper he could buy. This is a man that loves newspapers. He really loves nothing else. It is just newspapers. This is what he's focused on. this is what he lives, breathes, and will die for.
At a time when people are saying newspapers are dying, including people like you, in fact.
Absolutely. And he doesn't believe that for a single instant. He believes, actually, or even he can go further than that, the death of newspapers, if that's what it is, will be good for Rupert Murdoch, because he'll be the last man publishing newspapers, and he will have vanquished, in his mind, all of his competitors, and that would be fine with him.
Well, you say that other than the Wall Street Journal, Murdoch had strikingly little idea about what he had bought when he purchased Dow Jones. How do you get to be as successful as he is and not have knowledge about your business dealings and what you're purchasing?
Well, good question. I'm not sure I quite have the answer to that, because sometimes it can be confounding. But I think part of the answer is, here is a man who just does what he wants, who absolutely knows what he wants. So his acquisition of Dow Jones was not complicated by the fact that Dow Jones was in a lot of other businesses, which may be good, which may be bad, which may require different skill sets.
He would just have to swallow that as part of the package?
He was focused on the Wall Street Journal. It was a pure play for him, a quality newspaper. That's probably the second best newspaper in the world.
So he had to buy all that other stuff, which he could sell off at some point.
Well, he doesn't know. He's actually, it's a sort of a Murdoch thing. You know, don't think about things too much. Don't get sidetracked. Go for really what your gut tells you to do.
But it's interesting that he said he hated a lot about the Wall Street Journal. In fact, he hated all the things that people seem to love about the Wall Street Journal.
Well, it's the other thing about Murdoch in newspapers is that he always believes he can do it better.
So has he changed the Wall Street Journal much?
I think most people would agree that the changes have been dramatic. I know I'd argue that the changes have not been bad. Actually, that they've been pretty good. Certainly, he hasn't changed the way the paper the way his critics said he would. He hasn't made it a tabloid, but he has made it a more powerful newspaper.
But it doesn't have the investigative side that it used to have.
Well, I don't know. It seems to me it does. I was never such a great fan of the Wall Street Journal's investigative side anyway. I found it kind of mealy-mouthed, and they took a long time to do something, and Murdoch has a much greater sense of immediacy and of the story. And again, from my point of view, it's a better paper.
What about the economics of the purchase? He bought Dow Jones for $5.6 billion, which was 65% more than its market value.
Absolutely preposterous. Nobody else would have done this. I don't think anybody else would have paid $3.5 billion for Dow Jones. Murdoch paid that much because he knew that's what it would take to get this paper. Can he get a return on this? Well, he believes that he can. He believes that when, I suppose, all other newspapers are out of business, he will be there and this will pay off.
Although he doesn't always seem to be all that concerned. The Post has been bleeding money for many years.
Absolutely.
And yet he continues to publish it.
Yes, or when I said to Robert Thompson, who was then he's now the editor of the Wall Street Journal, but was the editor of the Times of London, and I proposed to him that I thought that the New York Post had possibly lost more money than any other media organization in history, and Thompson said, well, in that regard, I would not underestimate the Times of London.
Uh-huh. Do you think that he still covets the New York Times?
Absolutely. I think that he has every intention of buying the New York Times.
And since the New York Times doesn't seem to be for sale, he's going to have to offer a lot of money.
Well, I'm not sure. You know, the New York Times is now its market cap is at about $800 million. That is down from $8 billion. It is the New York Times is in free fall. It's in crisis. I believe that it will have to be sold, and I believe that it's likely that Rupert Murdoch will buy it.
Michael Wolff is a columnist for Vanity Fair, a two-time National Magazine Award winner, one of the nation's most influential writers about media, culture, and politics, and a commentator for CNBC, also founder of Newser, www.newser.com, which is a news aggregator. We'll talk about that later as well. His latest book, The Man Who Owns the News Inside, or actually Who Owns the Post, Inside the Secret World of Rupert Murdoch. In fact, he probably wants to buy the news as well. This book is published by Broadway Books. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Michael Wolff, W-O-L-F-F. His latest book, The Man Who Owns the News, Inside the Secret World of Rupert Murdoch, published by Broadway Books, a publisher that Rupert Murdoch doesn't own. But according to Rupert Murdoch's track record, it could just as easily have been published by HarperCollins. He seems to often give a lot of leeway to
You know, it's HarperCollins has been my publisher, and the original the idea for this book is I went to HarperCollins and I said, why don't we see if Murdoch will cooperate on a book? And everybody there said, great, great, great. And I said, well, this is easy. We'll just get a contract, a public contract that says that I can, write anything I want. And that's actually that was the initial way to get Murdoch interested in this. And then finally, the head of HarperCollins said, wait a minute, if you're too nice, everybody's going to say you're in the bag. And if you're not nice enough, we're all going to get fired. But then I said to Murdoch, well, could I do it with another publisher? He says, sure.
But it is interesting that he meddles sometimes and then has a hands-off policy other times.
Yeah, I think he meddles when he's interested, when it gets his attention. I mean, there's an interesting thing. I mean, he has a little kind of with a little critical interpretation might be called ADD. And so he can ignore lots of things, and then he'll focus on things.
But you say that he's embarrassed by the Fox News Network and that he despises Bill O'Reilly. So why doesn't he do anything to change that?
Makes money. I mean, you know,
he's extended Roger Ailes' contract.
Totally. I mean, and he would not. He's actually afraid of Roger on top of everything else. But the more importantly, you know, there's a division here, and the division is, you know, this is a guy who likes money. He's a guy who runs a business, who has shareholders, will do anything actually to make a buck. At the same time, he is increasingly and obviously uncomfortable. One of the things about Murdoch is you can see what makes him uncomfortable with Fox.
Well, it's interesting that we started off with a montage, and one of the things in it was Rupert Murdoch saying, I'm not a conservative. But he is supported generally conservative politicians. His media empire is largely focused on conservative newspapers like the New York Post and like Fox News.
He is. I mean, we can do it. He is a conservative temperamentally. He is absolutely a conservative. I mean, he's a kind of a perfect sort of 50s dad kind of guy. He doesn't like any kind of things to the side, any kind of change. I mean, he is that perfect old time, even 1950s television sort of guy. His politics reflect that, but are actually very thin. It doesn't go very deep.
He supports a lot of conservatives, but every so often he has made an exception to
Role. Tony Blair and New Labour in the UK exists largely because of Rupert Murdoch.
And earlier, Margaret Thatcher, he was one of her strongest supporters.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, his politics are part of his being a newspaper man. So it's really about what's the story, what's the best story.
The Post endorsed John McCain, but he seems to have a cordial relationship with Barack Obama.
Well, last year when I was conducting these interviews with Murdoch over the course of the presidential campaign during the New York primary, I said I was actually undecided myself. I said, Rupert, I don't know who, Hillary, Obama. I said, I'm going to give you my vote. What should I do? And he kind of paused, and Murdoch is a little Nixonian, and he says, Obama. He'll sell more papers.
And yet at the same time, he had Sean Hannity doing things which suggested that Barack Obama was a jihadist.
Well, I think that actually, you know, that was Roger Ailes. And in fact, the first meeting, Murdoch kept trying to meet Obama, kept reaching out, kept sending messages, which Obama would ignore. And then there was in June, there was finally a kind of a summit organized at the Waldorf Astoria. And Murdoch went there and brought Roger Ailes with him. And the initial conversation was between Murdoch and Obama. And Obama was actually quite respectful and discussed Murdoch's father. And they had this nice conversation. And then Ailes was brought in. And Obama lit into Ailes. And said, "I'm not coming on your network. You know, you paint me as a terrorist. Why should I stand for that? Why should I waste another minute?" So that was really Murdoch setting this up so that Obama could take his best shot at Ailes.
It's also been said that his third wife, Wendy Deng, has more liberal politics than Murdoch has had, and the other members of his family, and that she's actually softening.
Yeah, I think that there's
the hanging out with people like Bono and David Geffen and the Google guys. They're all very strongly in the Democratic camp.
Absolutely, and I think it's his second wife, Anna, who he was married to for 31 years, was incredibly conservative. She was much more conservative than he was, and she was pulling him to the right. And I think that there's a thing, and his children talk about the fact that he's incredibly henpecked, a classic 50s dad again.
And they told you that?
Yes.
How open were they when you talked to the kids?
They were quite open. Some of them, several of them, were incredibly open. As a matter of fact, I went to see his oldest daughter in Australia.
That was during the first marriage.
Yes. And that's Prudence. And I got there and she said, "Well, I spoke to my father about this, and he said that I could say anything to you." And for the next many hours, she said everything.
Well, she has to be a little bitter because she's kind of out of the loop, isn't she?
Yeah, bitterness. I wouldn't say. I mean, I think that she is. I mean, this is a family like all families, not better, not worse, and all of their problems are rather out in the open, but they are all very close to each other. And I think that she was I think she enjoyed talking about her father.
Michael Wolfe is my guest. His latest book, The Man Who Owns the News, Inside the Secret World of Rupert Murdoch, published by Broadway Books. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. You say they're close. In fact, you describe Rupert Murdoch above all as a family man, and you say he talks to his children every day. Really, that close knit?
Very much.
All of them?
And that was at least some of them, and they all get their turns. Yeah, I mean he's in close. I mean these are his closest advisors on top of everything else.
Is there competition between the siblings?
Oh, absolutely. Deep competition, and one of the interesting things in terms of the succession here. Remember, each of his children. Actually the three children by his second marriage by Anna have at one time or another been the designated heir. First his daughter, then his son Lachlan, now his son James. So there is, I mean, the tension, the dynastic tensions within this family are ever present.
Well, why has the line of succession changed?
Well, because number one, because he won't get out of the way, and so he sort of tempts his children with this possibility, and then rather, if not outright humiliates them, certainly frustrates them.
And how does this play as a generational thing? Was he the likely heir to his father's media empire?
He was the only heir. He had. He comes from a family of four children. The other three are girls.
Girls could have inherited, but not at that time. Were they interested?
I mean, I think that they could have, but it was not. This was a very traditional. This is traditional family. This was. Actually, the Murdoch family in Australia has a royal heir to it. So he was the prince. Without question, and his father died when he was 22. He from the earliest age he stepped up to running this company.
Ian, you said that James is the current heir apparent, and he seems to be the closest to his father.
No, I wouldn't say that. They're all close.
No, I mean, like him, most like his father.
Yes, I mean that's sort of within the company. That's the that's what people say, and I'm not sure that I entirely see this. Clearly James is the one most trying to act like his father, and in some way he acts like his father and supersedes him. So he's a very business, as though a business school kind of guy, although he didn't go to business school.
How old are the youngest children? He married Wendy Deng, a woman almost 40 years younger than he is 9 years ago. I gather his mother wasn't fond of Wendy, although, first of all, does he pay much attention to his mother, who has to be
99.
He's 79, his mother's 99.
Yeah, he's 77, will be 78. His mother is 99, will be 100 this year, yes. It would be hard not to pay attention to her. She is a very, very strong-minded woman, as lucid as, at times, and I spent quite a bit of time with her, and at times I felt she was more lucid than her son. Very, very impressive woman.
How did he meet Wendy?
That is a subject of enormous contention, and this was really the only detail in the book in which there were some strong pressure to alter the facts as they are. But he met her in she was working for the News Corp company in Hong Kong. And he was in Hong Kong. He was actually on his way from Japan. He was going to Shanghai, and he needed someone to take him around.
And she was an intern, or was she higher place than that?
Yeah, she was a higher place. She had gone to Yale Business School, and so she was at the initial management level in the company. And he called to the CEO of the Hong Kong company and said, "I need somebody, you know, who can show me around, who can be an interpreter too." And I actually needed an interpreter. The interpreter was away, so that they had to quick figure out who to do this. They sent Wendy in News Corp, and the rest is history.
And what role does she play in the current News Corp empire?
Well, I mean, she plays. She is as the wife of the chairman. She is as influential as, let's say, a first lady. As a matter of fact,
she also gives him entree into China, doesn't she?
Well, she has been very helpful in China, and she is now actually one of the key figures in the MySpace operation. MySpace is a company owned by News Corp. But that operation in China, yes.
So he's entered the digital world with MySpace.
Does
he have a MySpace page?
News Corp has entered the digital world. I would never accuse Rupert of having entered the digital world.
His wife reads him his email because he can't access it himself.
Doesn't use a computer, doesn't get email, can't get his cell phone to work. He is really absolutely uninterested in this aspect of media.
And I've heard he wants to get rid of MySpace, even though it's so popular with kids.
Well, the concern with MySpace is that, you know, they bought this for $600 million. It's has risen to an arguable value of sometimes $20 billion, $25 billion, $15 billion, whatever, many, many billions, and they would like to get some of those billions before before the world changes and there's a new digital flavor of the month, which there probably is now. It's called Facebook.
Kathy from the Upper West Side wants you to talk about Rupert Murdoch's statement that the reason newspapers are declining is that they have contempt for their public.
Well, I think that he feels that most newspapers are poorly run, that that newspapers don't speak to their readers, that readers don't enjoy reading newspapers anymore. He feels that he is one of the few newspaper people who is willing to speak to readers.
We only have a few minutes left, but I'd like you to talk a bit about Newser.com, which you launched.
It was a kind of interesting thing because as I'm discussing newspapers with Rupert Murdoch, possibly the greatest newspaper proprietor of our time, I'm involved with starting this business, which is really about replacing newspapers. And Newser is an online newspaper, an online news aggregator. It has no reporters. What it has just is it brings together hundreds and hundreds of separate news sources every day.
But you're relying on other newspapers to supply you with that.
Absolutely. All newspapers, blogs, the whole new world of information. Our job is to...
How is that different than Huffington Post?
Well, Huffington Post is actually has a lot of original content. We have none. We're really just there to filter the news, and also Huffington Post is about liberal news, and we're there to do all news. My idea actually going into this was could you create a kind of a new version of the network news that is efficient and news that is entertaining.
Do you think that a paper like the New York Times will see its future on the Internet?
No. I think the Internet is killing the New York Times.
Because they have a really strong presence there.
Yes,
a lot of people rely on it.
Well, because they absolutely do. It has many more readers. It's taking readers away. It's taking readers and advertisers away. But their online business, given the economics of the online world, their online business probably will max out at, if they're really lucky, at $300 million a year, and that's what it costs them to that's what their news operation costs. So
there's no profit.
Right.
They're eliminating buying all that newsprint.
It's still $300 million is what the news gathering what the New York Times spends on news gathering alone.
Michael Wolff's The Man Who Owns the News: Inside the Secret World of Rupert Murdoch is published by Broadway Books. Thank you so much for being with us. Who are you going after next?
I'm going to lunch.
It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you very much.